When you're making a meal, how much thought do you put into your sides? Be honest, do you find yourself reaching for a bag of frozen broccoli, maybe a box of instant mashed potatoes or pre-made buns from the store? No judgment. A survey late last year found that 44% of millennials would bring an already prepared dish to their holiday gathering rather than make one from scratch. A quarter of them said they'd even take credit for making it, but that's another story. Side dishes can be tricky. You have to know what goes well with the main course, and you don't want to keep going back to the same thing again and again. Plus, it's extra time and effort. The folks at America's Test Kitchen are coming out with a cookbook designed to elevate our weeknight meals and dinner parties. It's called The Side Dish Bible, 1,001 perfect recipes for every vegetable, rice, grain, and bean dish you will ever need. It hits shelves on November 5th. Dan Zuccarello is the executive food editor of cookbooks at America's Test Kitchen. Dan, welcome back to Food Friday.
Thanks for having me.
Well, side dishes, sometimes they're a second thought. How important are they for a meal?
Well, you have it exactly. I mean, I think for something that makes up such a large part of our dinner plate, it's often the last thing we think about. So, you know, for this project, we really wanted to put side dishes center stage and give them the attention that they deserved.
And when I see recipes online, it seems like the fun stuff that people are really into is the entree. Do we just unfairly neglect that side dish in the food eating world?
Well, the thing is that side dishes, you know, there's a lot of challenges that come with side dishes, right? I mean, I think, first of all, for me particularly, there's sometimes just too many options. You know, I kind of relate it to the Netflix epidemic where you have so many things to choose from, you almost don't even want to make a choice. And so part of, you know, doing a book like this was kind of engineering the structure of the book to make, you know, coming up with the side dish that you thought was perfect for your meal easy to navigate and easy to find. And then there's also clearly this flavor rut that we get into. You know, there's a lot of options, and, you know, you can get really kind of bogged down by just constantly making the same side dish for every meal. And so we wanted to make sure that we had plenty of options for people to really reinvigorate their meal, right?
Yeah, 1,001 recipes in the book. Give us a sense of the range of the kinds of side dishes you tackle here.
Well, I mean, it's soup to nuts. I mean, with 1,001 recipes, this is the, you know, ultimate book. You will not need another cookbook on side dishes in your kitchen. And like I said, we really tried to think about how best to navigate the vast landscape of side dishes. The book starts off with a chapter really focused on the essentials, quick, easy recipes that you can throw together. Most of them are done in 30 minutes or less. But at the same time, we kind of thought about other experiences that people are going through throughout the year and organized the chapters based on that. So clearly there's a section on the holidays. Plenty of space devoted to potatoes, the favorite side dish, of course. A lot of, you know, really interesting things with casseroles, salads, unique ways to use vegetables and grains that aren't just kind of the classic, you know, steamed sides.
Talking to Dan Zuccarello from America's Test Kitchen on this edition of Food Friday, talking about their new book, The Side Dish Bible. Well, Dan, you shared a few recipes with us. We've got them online at WPR.org/Food Friday. Here's one of the more straightforward ones, I think. Skillet broccoli with olive oil and garlic. And you gave this and all the recipes the usual Test Kitchen treatment. You did your mad scientist work on this to find ways to make this broccoli a little crispy on the outside, but still cook through on the inside, not the like mushy boiled broccoli that some people might think of. Talk us through how this works out.
Yeah, I love this recipe. I mean, like I said, you know, there's nothing wrong with a simple side dish, right? It doesn't always have to be really complicated. But this recipe really shows how easy it can be to kind of take it to the next level, right? The olive oil and the garlic being the flavors here. But we also have a variation with sesame oil and ginger. The kind of brilliance of this recipe is in how simple it is. We start with a really hot skillet. We start by browning the broccoli, and then we steam it. We cover it. We add a little bit of water. We took inspiration from classic stir-fry techniques. This is often what you see when you're stir-frying vegetables, this whole combination of saute and steam. And so what you end up with is a really quick, it's done in less than 20 minutes, technique for cooking broccoli. And we add the olive oil and garlic at the end so that the garlic doesn't burn, but there's just enough time for it to really coat the broccoli and give it some really great flavor. It's a really easy side dish, really delicious.
And you've solved a problem for me on what goes wrong on my stir fry sometimes, because I, you know, fry it in the pan or wok when I had a wok. And then it's good on the outside, but not ready on the inside. By the time it's cooked through, it's kind of burning on the outside. So the fry then steam concept actually could change my cooking a lot. That's pretty handy.
Yeah, I use this idea a lot. Sometimes I'll incorporate the microwave, actually. If I'm roasting something even, I'll put the vegetables, maybe it's green beans, in a large bowl with maybe a tablespoon or two of water. I'll cover it, microwave it for maybe 4 minutes, just enough time to create some steam in the bowl and to soften the vegetable. Drain the vegetable, maybe on some paper towels, and then just put it into a hot skillet. And that's kind of another way of accomplishing the same thing.
Wow. Okay. Any other tips on thinking of vegetables as our side? This is a pretty common side. Any good techniques that are, again, pretty quick and easy?
Yeah. So, I think the biggest suggestion that I can give your listeners is to think about vegetables beyond just kind of the classic saute or steam. Thinking about incorporating vegetables into a salad, not necessarily serving it warm. Maybe it's roasted and then you let it cool down and you toss it with a vinaigrette. Maybe you add some cheese, some goat cheese or nuts to turn it into more of a salad component. Kind of just taking a step back and thinking, I love to incorporate vegetables into my dinner or my lunch. But it doesn't always have to be, hot, made immediately just before eating.
Before we get back to some of the other recipes you shared with us, do you have thoughts on pairing, picking the right side dish for whatever the main course happens to be?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple things that I always, advise people when they're thinking about kind of pairing side dishes. And this happens a lot when we're thinking about having, a few people over for dinner. We've got Thanksgiving right around the corner. It's definitely one of those times where we're thinking a lot about side dishes. The first thing that I would say is think about colors and textures. You want to make sure that you've got something green, something crunchy, something creamy. Thinking about food in the terms of how people are going to enjoy it. In the same way, thinking about this balance of flavors, you're going to want something maybe a little spicy, something a little sweet, maybe something that's really bold with, a pickled ingredient or a vinegar or something like that. And then at the same time, considering, the time it's going to take you to make these side dishes, you don't want everything to have to come out of your oven. And so, like I said, thinking about vegetables in terms of salads that you could be making, or incorporating a piece of equipment like a slow cooker or a pressure cooker to help kind of create these side dishes and take that space and on your stovetop and kind of put it to better use.
Potatoes seem to be one of the most common side dishes out there. And of your 1,001 recipes in this book, I understand, 57 of them are potato themed.
It is the favorite side dish. You have to give plenty of space to it.
And there is a recipe, you shared one of those 57 with us, the Super Stuffed Baked Potatoes. These look good. I think that's the one on the cover of the cookbook. So I'm guessing these are pretty good. How does this come together? I've made twice baked potatoes before. Is this a similar sort of arrangement?
Yeah, I think everyone loves a great stuffed potato. It can get a little frustrating because you want to make sure you've got a really creamy interior, but you also want the exterior to be really crispy and well roasted. And so a couple things that we do here that I think are really interesting. First, when you're making a stuffed baked potato, you want it to be stuffed, right? You want plenty of filling. And so what we actually found was we roast an extra baked potato and take the filling and use that as part of the filling for the other potatoes to really make sure that there's plenty of stuffing in there. But one of the other things that we do, like I was mentioning, you really want a crispy exterior. We actually will microwave the potatoes to kind of soften them up. We'll take out the potato filling, and then we'll put the empty shells back in the oven while we're making the mashed potato filling. And that kind of gives time for the skin to really crisp up, get you that texture that you really enjoy, so that there's this really nice contrast between the creamy interior and the crispy exterior. The filling comes together really easy. We use Boursin cheese. It's a seasoned cheese. It's really widely available in the grocery stores. A little bit of half and half. It's a really excellent side dish to incorporate into your weekday meals.
I had to look up that Boursin cheese, and I recognize the packaging. That's a brand name of a kind of cheese. Can we mix and match sort of creamy cheese things to fill it with?
Absolutely. If you can't find Boursin at your grocery store, goat cheese is an excellent substitute. Cream cheese is even a great substitute. There's some fresh chives in the recipe, but you could certainly substitute your favorite herb, parsley, basil, tarragon. They would all work really well.
It's Food Friday. We're talking about side dishes with Dan Zuccarello, executive food editor of cookbooks at America's Test Kitchen. Their new book is The Side Dish Bible. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite side dish that you'd like to share with us that goes great with what? Fill in the blank there. Do you put a lot of effort into the side dish, or is it an afterthought for you? Do you have a question for our guest about how to prepare any of a wide variety of sides? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Find some recipes at WPR.org/Food Friday. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're continuing our Food Friday conversation with Dan Zuccarello. He's executive food editor of cookbooks at America's Test Kitchen. They've got one coming out on November 5th. It's called The Side Dish Bible, 1001 Perfect Recipes for Every Vegetable, Rice, Grain, and Bean Dish You Will Ever Need. Call 800-642-1234 if you want to join in. Talk about your side dish game. What is your favorite side to make? What's your favorite potato recipe? Any favorite fall foods that get into your side dishes? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Jerry is with us in Shawano. Jerry, hi.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. What do you got for us, Jerry?
Well, this time of the year is just amazing with the types of food, and you always want to eat a little heavier and stuff. But one of the things I really, really love this time of the year is Brussels sprouts.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And not throwing them in a pot of water with some salt, but taking some time to maybe peel them or quarter them. Roast them with bacon and olive oil, you know, maybe sprinkle some cheese and onions or something on it. What are some other thoughts and ideas that get your mouth watering with Brussels sprouts?
That's great, Jerry. Your ideas, I can run a long way with those. Dan, any other ideas for our Brussels sprouts?
Well, I agree. I mean, I absolutely love Brussels sprouts. If some people don't like them because they think they taste a little cabbagey, I absolutely love Brussels sprouts. What comes to mind immediately, we learned this technique. We recently did a recipe for a shaved Brussels sprout salad, and it's absolutely delicious. And it couldn't be easier. You take the Brussels sprouts. I like to trim off the ends, cut them in half, and then take a knife, and I just very thinly slice the Brussels sprouts, toss it with a little bit of lemon juice, some olive oil. I let that sit with some salt just for maybe 15, 20 minutes for the Brussels sprouts to soften, and then I take some Parmesan cheese, and I stir that in there with it. It's absolutely delicious, a really great way to serve Brussels sprouts. Most people are used to cooking the Brussels sprouts, but they're equally well delicious raw. I also really love doing a Brussels sprout gratin. If you haven't done, you know, potato gratin is a favorite of mine as well, but if you have an opportunity to do a Brussels sprout gratin, I think you won't go back.
What is that?
Well, so the caller mentioned, you know, roasting the Brussels sprouts is a really great way to draw out the natural sweetness of Brussels sprouts. But then at the same time, we just make a very quick cream sauce with some cheese, some heavy cream. Once the Brussels sprouts are roasted, just kind of pour that mixture over top, put it back in the oven with some breadcrumbs. And you've got this excellent casserole dish. It's a great way to eat Brussels sprouts.
That sounds fantastic, Jerry. Hope that helps. Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We've got another recipe. This is a little bit of a curveball. This is a slow cooker recipe, slow cooker Mexican-style beans. What are there special things we have to do when we're making our beans in the slow cooker?
Well, I love using my slow cooker to make side dishes. I think it's a great way to make a side dish and, like I said earlier, not take up all the space on your stovetop. This is really, you know, a great dish to make if you've got a lot of people coming over. You know, a couple things that really are great about this recipe, you don't have to soak the beans. You know, we use pinto beans here. They're a smaller bean. You can actually just throw them right into the slow cooker raw. It cooks for 8 to 9 hours, so it's got plenty of time to get nice and tender. We add a little bit of beer to our recipe just for a little bit of extra depth of flavor in the broth. We finish it with some, you know, brown sugar, cilantro, lime juice. Really, really delicious, you know, side dish to do in your slow cooker.
And one tip you give in this recipe is basically put in all the spice you think you're going to need and then put in some more when you're cooking beans in the slow cooker. Why is that?
Well, so the slow cooker, we know, you know, the longer something cooks, the more the flavors can get muted. And this is particularly true for the slow cooker. And so not just for this recipe, but for most of the recipes that we do in our slow cooker, we kind of heavy hand the aromatics. So in this case, it's chili powder. But certainly the onion, the herbs that you might be using in your slow cooker, we kind of use, you know, almost twice as much as we would in a traditional recipe. And really it's just because those flavors will get muted over time. And we really want to make sure that they're present when we're ready to eat it.
We have that recipe up at WPR.org/Food Friday. It is Food Friday. Dan Zuccarello is with us from America's Test Kitchen, their new book coming out in early next month, actually, The Side Dish Bible. We are putting side dishes front and center. Dan, I want to take a step back and talk about your methods at America's Test Kitchen. These recipes we're seeing, they're the end result of you guys usually trying a lot of different methods and subtle permutations, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we really approach cooking from an analytical perspective. We don't take anything for granted. And so when we're approaching a recipe, we really try to see what is everyone out there doing? What are the challenges that people are facing? And we try to replicate them in the kitchen so that we can come up with a solution that we think is best for the recipe and gives us the most success. And so it's a long process. We spend weeks on a single recipe just to get it to be perfect before we put it into the book. So like you said, yeah, these recipes are the end result of months and months of testing with multiple test cooks. We actually have a little over 60 test cooks in our kitchens developing recipes for all of our platforms. It's a lot of work, but it's work that we find really valuable.
Out on the market now, there are a lot of different, from our perspective, kind of funky grains, the quinoas and millets and amaranth and things like that. Do you have any fun grain dishes that can really add something completely new to our side dish palette?
Well, one of the grains that I really like lately is farro. It's a kind of ancient grain. You see it a lot of in Italian cooking. I like to treat it very much like rice for a risotto. Most people know how this, you know, risotto, it's a slow-cooked rice dish. You kind of start with a little bit of broth and rice, and you constantly stir it, and the starches from the rice help to thicken the broth, and you get this really luscious, you know, creamy dish. And the same can be done with farro, and you can find farro again in most grain sections of the grocery store. The natural food section is probably your best bet if you're looking for it. And again, we like to, in order to get the most starch to kind of come out of the farro, we actually pulse it in the blender a little bit to break down the grains. But again, we put it into a saucepan. Sometimes I like to add a little bit of butter to begin, kind of toast the grains to get a little bit of that nuttiness out. And then I just slowly add warm broth. It could be vegetable broth. It could be chicken broth. And over time, those grains are going to soften, but the starches are going to help thicken the broth. And you end up with this, like I said, really rich, luscious side dish.
Dan, I got to say, I'm kind of risotto avoidant. I've never made it. And the reason is it's a side dish usually, but you got to spend all that time stirring it when you want to be focusing on other parts of the meal. If I can be infomercially, there's got to be a better way, right?
Well, we actually did a technique where we kind of like heavy-handed the broth with our risotto, and we let it go into the oven on a low oven, maybe like 200 degrees for about like 30 minutes. And the truth of the matter is that you can actually let the risotto sit for a while and just kind of soften the grains before you start any stirring. Ultimately, at the end of the cooking, you really do need to stir because that whipping process is what's really giving you that creaminess. But certainly, if you've got your hands tied cooking dinner, you could certainly try, you know, either the saucepan or you could do it in a Dutch oven, but maybe put, twice as much liquid as you think that you need when you're starting off the risotto. Put it in a low oven and just let it cook slowly while you're doing other things. And then right before you're ready to serve, you can kind of give it a quick stir and finish it off.
All right, I want to spend a minute or two on a topic. This is kind of a cooking confession for me, Dan. I'm an okay cook, but for some reason when I make a green salad, I don't know. I don't know how you do that wrong, but I always find it kind of boring. What kind of ideas do you have to make a good green salad in the side dish book?
Yeah, so I keep things really simple when it comes to kind of jazzing up my side dishes. And I like to think of, you know, the basic ingredients that I have in my house and ways to use them. And so, you know, everyone, you know, when they're making a side salad, it's a kind of classic vinegar and oil. So think about different ways to incorporate that tanginess of vinegar. You know, maybe you're using a citrus juice. Maybe it's lemon juice. Maybe it's lime juice. Orange juice is a really great option. Doesn't always have to be olive oil. Maybe it's, you know, avocado oil or a nut oil. Those are easy ways to kind of add some extra flavor. Maybe you throw in a nut or a soft cheese, you know, fresh herbs. These are really simple things. They're things that we all have on hand, but we don't really think about them as options for jazzing up our side dishes. But in particular for a salad, it's a really easy way to kind of get more creative so you don't just have kind of a plain salad for dinner.
That's awesome. Dan, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Dan Zuccarello, executive food editor of cookbooks at America's Test Kitchen. We talked to him about improving our side dish game and Test Kitchen's forthcoming book, The Side Dish Bible, 1001 perfect recipes for every vegetable, rice, grain, and bean dish you will ever need. It hits shelves on November 5th. We've got three of those 1001 recipes posted at WPR.org/Food Friday, the super stuffed baked potatoes, skillet broccoli with olive oil and garlic, and slow cooker Mexican style beans. Try them out. Let us know how they went on the Ideas Network Facebook page.